Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 96 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her compassion. Oh boy, before we start, let me make sure you know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate and review us because I'm waiting for that. I love to read it. Love to hear from you. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Look, I'm all about compassion, especially when it comes to difficult people in our life. And instead of having all that drama and trauma, certainly there's a better way of dealing with this, and maybe it's through compassion. But how do you do that? So I read about a fabulous new study that just came out, and we have one of the scientists involved with this study, and it's all about how you find compassion for difficult people. Yeah, I know you want to slap them across the head and, you know, drop kick them, you know, right through the exit door, but no, wait, stop. Before you do that, there's another way. We have with us Dr. Kelly McGonigal, and she is a scientist who was part of a fascinating study that really looked at how one can learn to be able to become more compassionate. Now, she's a health psychologist and lecturer at Stanford University and the author of several books, including The Willpower Instinct, The Science of Compassion, and The Upside of Stress. Indeed, there is an upside of stress. And through the Stanford Center for Compassion, wow, that's a cool center, and altruism, she co-founded the Stanford Compassion Cultivation Training, which helps individuals deepen empathy and compassion. Hey, a lot of you might also know her from her TED Talk, How to Make Stress Your Friend, which is one of the 20 most viewed TED Talks of all time. I saw it, loved it. It was fabulous. Kelly, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, Kelly, tell me, why the study? Where did this come from?
Well, so as you mentioned, we created this program at Stanford that really we were thinking, how can we help people think about compassion like a muscle that you can build, a strength that you can train? So we created this program. It's 8 weeks. People come for a couple of hours a week, and we talk about compassion. We talk about empathy, and we give people some practical skills and also some meditations to practice to help deepen their compassion and empathy. And so this is one of the studies we published looking at what are the benefits when people devote some time to thinking about compassion in this way, like a muscle that you can train and develop.
Well, what did you find? I mean, you did
the study.
We found
a lot of good things.
Yeah,
First of all, let's talk about it. Yeah, and I should mention, by the way, you raised the question of having compassion and empathy for difficult people. And one of the things that we've learned right away is that one of the most difficult people to have compassion for is yourself. And so we also look at developing self-compassion and empathy for yourself. And we learned as we went that that was one of the most difficult people that a lot of people, especially women, found a lot of challenges with self-compassion. And so we found that this program increases empathy and compassion for yourself and for others. It increases people's willingness to take care of themselves, even as they're strengthening their compassion and empathy for others. We found that it increases happiness, it reduces worry and anxiety and depression, and it also makes people more accepting of their own difficulties and their own difficult emotions. It helps them handle their own pain and suffering. It's a really interesting paradox that the more we try to deepen our empathy and compassion for other people, particularly difficult others, we seem to be the recipient of our own compassion, and that it becomes easier to deal with our own pain and suffering as well.
Do you have to do self-compassion before you can be compassionate with others?
No, you know, it's so interesting. We've all heard that you can't love anyone until you love yourself. That turns out scientifically not to be true. There are a lot of people who are caring and loving for others and incredibly hard on themselves, or they deny themselves things that would make them healthy and happy. And this is also true in particular for women. And so I like to actually get rid of that myth right away, because a lot of people, when they notice that they're hard on themselves or they don't have a lot of self-compassion, then they start to beat themselves up and think, I must really have no compassion at all, because I've heard that you have to be compassionate for yourself first. So actually what we found is that you need to be compassionate for yourself in order to have true compassion and sustainable compassion, so that you can continue to get joy and meaning out of helping others or caring for others. The real key is to include yourself in that. Otherwise, you can burn out on, you know, always being a caregiver or always being kind to others and not yourself.
Well, I love the fact that you brought up the gender specificity to this, because, you know, we're here at the Her podcast, not him, her. And one of the things that we have, you know, clearly research has shown is that women really are very rough on themselves because of that little P word, perfectionism, which seems to be a lot more of a character trait with women than it is for men. Men are more like, well, you know, whatever, let's go with the flow. It didn't work out so well now. Who cares? Let's just, you know, keep moving forward. Women are like, I can't believe I just did that. Shoulda, coulda, woulda. And then we've got this mental Cuisinart that just keeps going round and round, you know, with yeah. You know, what an idiot I am. And I couldn't, you know, how could I say that to her? And, you know, of course, that was 20 years ago, but they're still doing it in their brain. And women tend to beat themselves up. And I think a lot of that has to do with their own expectations of themselves, ergo the perfectionism. Have you found that?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the keys to self-compassion seems to be to actually not hold yourself to standards that are so fundamentally different than the standards you would hold other people to, including people that you care about. There's some sort of, it's like women expect themselves to be exceptional in every way, even though they would forgive or cut some slack for people that they care about. And so one of the things we try to teach is this idea of common humanity, which helps us have compassion for difficult other people, as well as for ourselves. This idea that everyone struggles, everyone makes mistakes, everyone experiences pain and illness. We're all sort of human together. And it works in this really interesting sort of reciprocal way, where when you can do that for people in your life you might judge or have some conflict with, it becomes easier to do it for yourself when you start to judge yourself.
Interesting. There's that judgment-free zone thing. It's like, wait a minute,
yeah.
You know, it's really difficult to not judge yourself, but you can kind of see what judging someone else might do. So when you externalize it, you know, it becomes a little clearer, but gosh, it just becomes sort of a gray, foggy mass when you're thinking about yourself. This is hard because, you know, you talk about in the research, there were four different emotional states that you were looking at: anxiety, calm, fatigue, and alertness. And, you know, in looking at each one of those and really trying to grasp how that person was doing with each one of those, this is hard work. I mean, this compassion work, this curriculum, this has got to be, you know, I mean, I know people who would just like to go from zero to slappy in the head if you're a difficult person, you know, in a heartbeat and a half, especially kind of more macho people who have like zero tolerance, zero patience, yeah. And go from, you know, become quite impatient, irritable, and impulsive. So
well,
to
let's
me,
talk
it seems
about what
like,
compassion is.
Yeah, you know, let's go there. Let's go there.
You raised the term fatigue and exhaustion and anxiety. And one of the things, we know that anger can be energizing. So one of the reasons we actually like to you know, experience that conflict or judgment is we are energized by anger. You know, your heart is pounding. It's one of those upsides of stress. But people don't often recognize that compassion is also energizing. That when you're in a state of compassion, which we define as just being aware that somebody else is struggling or suffering in some way, feeling connected to them, that you want them to thrive, you don't want them to suffer more, and feeling this kind of desire or motivation to reduce suffering in the world, to reduce conflict, to improve well-being. That's how we define compassion. That state, when you're in it, is physiologically just as energizing as anger is, but without a lot of the negative effects of anger. So it won't end up depleting you. It won't increase inflammation to the same degree as anger. And if you start to think of compassion as being a kind of energy that gives you courage and positive motivation, that can also help people understand why, you know, when you're all reared up and you're venting to someone about someone you're angry at, you know, you can sort of use that as fuel that you're going to conk out on. It's not sustainable. You can start to think, well, what could I do here in this moment that actually improves well-being, reduces suffering, solves this problem, and switch to that sort of alternate energy source that's more sustainable? Because compassion isn't about just sort of letting things go and being super chill and calm. You can be very engaged in life, but be doing it from a compassionate motivation.
Interesting. So you offered some tips. And these are, you know, if you're going to be using the Stanford program's teachings at home, the first one is don't suppress your thoughts. So I think a lot of people say, you know, don't have that negative thought, you horrible person, you. And the research shows that suppression activates that amygdala in your brain. This is, you know, where the fight and flight response resides. And suppressing will make you even more anxious in the long run. So
exactly.
You say don't
anything
suppress
you try to
your
resist,
thoughts.
You typically make worse. Right? It's going to, if you're angry and you try not to be angry, you're going to be angrier. Your blood pressure is going to go up higher. And at the same time, now you're going to be upset about the fact that you're trying not to be angry and you're still angry and you can feel it and you're trying to hide it. So whatever that suppression looks like. So it is the case that acceptance seems to give us a lot more freedom. And it often takes the edge off of whatever the distress is that we're feeling, whether it's fear or anger or sadness or whatever it is that we often try to push away. Just accepting it takes a little bit of the edge off, and it creates the space where we have more freedom to choose how we want to respond to that.
Interesting. So as an alternative to suppressing your thoughts, what you're actually what you're actually saying is to accept. And then try to pay attention briefly, and then let your thoughts drift on to something else. So you're saying, yes, it's absolutely true. No question that this person is difficult in my life, you know, micromanaging boss, a troublesome daughter, son, husband, whatever the issue may be. You simply wrap your head around acceptance. So acceptance then diffuses the anger, is what you're saying?
It definitely can. And, you know, one way to practice acceptance is to label it. Studies show that as soon as you start to label your emotion, it begins to calm the emotion a little bit to give you that extra freedom. It, for example, decreases activation in the amygdala if what you're feeling is fear or anger. You can label it. You can also notice what it feels like in the body. And, you know, one of my favorite things to do with some of these activating emotions like anxiety or fear or anger is to actually sense, oh yeah, this is my body giving me energy, whether you sense it as muscle tension or your heart pounding. And then you can decide, rather than try to suppress it, what do I want to do with this energy? Because it's mine now. I got the adrenaline in my body. That means I have extra energy to do something. And do I really want to waste it venting or yelling at someone else? Or might I point that energy in the direction of something that's going to resolve the problem or put it in the service of my own goals or even go for a run? And let this anger become fuel for doing something good for my health. Again, that's all very different than this idea that as soon as you feel the anger, you either have to vent it or get rid of it.
I love this. You know, and the other thing too, I want to make sure everyone out there in her podcast land heard, all right, compassion is energizing. I think a lot of people think compassion is sort of like, oh my gosh, we all have to get kind of quiet now and kind of hold hands and, you know, and the energy level kind of comes down. And no, it's exactly the opposite, because you're really, you know, becoming energized with the other person's situation. You're going to that place and you want to be able to help and support. And so all of a sudden you're commandeering all of that energy that could have gone somewhere else to a new place. I remember
Absolutely.
Doing this the other day when I was thinking about a very difficult person, and I didn't realize it, but they were going through a very tough divorce. And mm-hmm. that was unbeknownst to me. And no wonder, you know, they're so snappy and rotten to everybody who comes within 100 feet of them. Okay, I'm fine. I'm good. You know, because one of the things I think a lot of people do also with difficult people is they get personal. You know, they say, mm-hmm. well, you know, this person's, you know, really a jerk toward me. Well, maybe they're just in a really rotten place in their life and they're taking it out on everyone because, quite frankly, they don't know what else to do. And maybe they don't have the tools to be able to do something better. So, you know,
does
that make sense?
Yeah, this is one of the other strategies we recommend in our compassion training. People often come back and tell us the most useful thing we taught them was a single phrase. Just like me, this person suffers and wants to be free from suffering. That's a phrase of common humanity that we tell people to say in their head when they are taking things personally, when they are, you know, when they are angry by how someone else is acting, confused by why someone would be so difficult or causing harm to themselves or others. Just like me, this person suffers and wants to be free from suffering. And the great thing is you don't need to know the story. You don't need to know if they're going through a difficult divorce or they had a difficult childhood or they just got a diagnosis of a disease. You don't need to know what the story is because they're human. And often when people are being difficult, it's because they're in pain. And you don't need to excuse their behavior, but just understanding that it almost always comes from a place of pain and trying to find some relief from that, that it allows us to see them in a way that is more humanizing and more skillful, because as soon as you see someone as an actual human being and not some kind of evil cartoon enemy, you can actually maybe see more clearly what's going to be skillful in the situation. How can I give them what they need so that I can get what I want? This basic level of common humanity gives us so much more both control and freedom for not just how we're feeling on the inside, but for how we interact with people when we can't just sort of escape a work relationship or a personal relationship.
So in your tips, the first one was don't suppress your thoughts. The second one is acknowledge that you can be difficult too, which is part of the just like me rule, right?
I can be difficult too. Exactly.
What? Me? No, never. I'm never difficult. No, that doesn't happen. Well, the next one you say is be curious. What does that mean?
Yeah. So be curious about sort of, why a situation might be unfolding in the way it is. Part of it is seeing other people as human. Part of it is also being curious about what the opportunities are in the situation. So, you know, compassion is really about trying to reduce the suffering that is present for yourself and others. And if you have an attitude of curiosity, like what is the cause of this suffering? And is there anything that I could do in this moment to bring some relief, to bring a sense of humor, to get my own needs met or help someone else solve a problem? That type of attitude is quite different than the sort of that we can sometimes sort of double down on our own opinions or our own sense of righteousness that gets in the way of moving through the situation and often resolving the situation.
I see. Okay, excellent. Okay, now I got the be curious part. How about tune into your body?
Yeah, so that actually, so that doesn't have to be a last step, but that's really this idea that if you take a moment, you notice what you're sensing, that you have some freedom to not only accept it, but also transform it. So maybe when you tune into your body and you sense, this is really toxic what I'm feeling right now. So we know, for example, that if you're ruminating over something that happened, you know, earlier in the day, and you're rehearsing the hurt in your mind, you're playing it over and over, you're thinking about what you could have said. We know that's not a great physiological state to be in. And sometimes when you check in with your body, you can say, you know what? I don't really like the way I feel right now. And even though maybe I am right, and maybe that situation shouldn't have happened, I'm going to choose to have a different experience in my body because I'm the only recipient of my own anger right now. I'm giving it to myself, and it's not productive in this moment. So when you tune into your body, maybe you decide you want to practice some breathing techniques to calm down, or maybe you decide you want to put on a song that you love that's going to lift your spirit. But again, it's about this idea of having freedom. And sometimes the most compassionate thing you can do is for yourself to let go of a situation a little bit and choose to give yourself a different experience than your own anger or sort of rumination.
Wow. Okay. And then the final tip here, you know, just in summary tips is, oh my goodness, practice, practice, practice. What do you mean by that?
Yes. Yeah. So we do know that compassion and self-compassion are skills, that one of the first things you need to practice is even just having the intention to do it. It might not be on the spot. So maybe you decide, okay, I want to practice being a little bit more understanding of others or a little bit kinder to myself. I'm going to practice more self-care. Set that intention and strengthen it. So, you know, remind yourself of it when you wake up in the morning. Set the intention to catch yourself when you're being self-critical or judgmental of others, or you're ruminating over your anger. You can just set that intention and you start practicing noticing, and you start practicing noticing what your responses are. And, you know, people really find it easier and easier to develop compassion when they start to experience the direct benefits of it. And so, you know, one thing that strengthens the skill is when you notice, yeah, I did feel better when I softened my own attitude and I had a really great conversation with that person and I understand the situation better. We often encourage people to practice compassion satisfaction as well. Like, you got to give yourself a pat on the back when you've been able to come at a situation differently or when you've done something kind to yourself. Like, let yourself savor that. Take a warm glow. Be like, I practice compassion today. And that's who I am and who I'm becoming.
I love it. I absolutely love it. You know, it reminds me of one of my most favorite books of all time by George Leonard, Mastery. And, you know, in that book, he is just all about, you know, the whole center core of what practice is. And I just think that a lot of people give up too soon.
When you practice, it's trial and error. Making mistakes. You have to have a growth mindset.
A whole lot of them. And that's okay. Yeah. You know, bring it on. I always say, you know, fall down on your little hiney and stand up, dust it off and keep moving it, because that's how you learn. Last time I looked, that's how I learned how to ride a bike or do anything, you know. So always remember to practice and, you know, kind of park your ego somewhere else and just learn how to be able to take it on a day by day basis on the overall.
Yeah.
So this course, this is Stanford's Compassion Cultivation Training Program, or CCT. Now, mm-hmm. you know, you say that anyone could take Stanford's course, which was created in 2009 by Thutthen Jinpa, the Dalai Lama's chief English translator, and a group of neuroscientists, psychologists, and therapists. And it aims to teach people compassion toward all, including the difficult people in their lives. And it's also taught in the universities, that Stanford University's medical school, and by more than 100 certified teachers around the world. So how can our wonderful Herb podcast listeners potentially take this course?
Yeah, so we do have it all over the world now, but it's growing. So it is possible to find it. We're in South America and Europe and all over North America and Australia, but we are growing. So it might take some time to get to where the listeners are. They can go to the website CCARE, that's CCARE.stanford.edu. And we have a listing of where all the classes are. We're eventually going to move into online classes. We don't have that available yet. But, you know, there are lots of other ways to also develop these skills. You know, people can Google compassion training and they'll find that there are other programs like our program in other locations. And I would encourage people to really go with whatever they can find.
Okay, I'm smelling an app here too, right?
I know,
yeah. I mean, come on, there's an app for that, right? So, you know, tell your wonderful Stanford team to kind of get on it, man. Let's get that app. Let's get that online, because you have such great work there. And I think everyone out there wants to avail themselves of that. So yeah. Kudos to you for all of this. And I want to make sure everyone out there in her podcast land knows we've been talking to Dr. Kelly McGonigal, and she is one of the scientists involved with this work at Stanford. And we've really been talking about the compassion for difficult people. She is the author of The Upside of Stress, her latest book, and the other books are The Willpower Instinct, right? And The Science of Compassion. Look her up at Kelly McGonigal. Now, I'll spell that KellyMcGonigal.com, because she's done fabulous work. clearly check out her TED Talk because she totally rocks. And it's How to Make Stress Your Friend. And Kelly, I cannot begin to thank you enough for being on the Her Podcast and sharing your wit and wisdom on all things compassion.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And remember to catch every episode out there of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And then just take a moment now after this podcast and rate and review us, because I'm sitting here waiting. I love your feedback. And I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our Her show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening. And stay well.